I see it as an investment of the client in its own brand. Because, you know, I've talked to so many architects and design firms, and not everybody is looking at architectural photography in that way, in a really economic way, for which you can increase the value of your investment by doing the right things.
Welcome to Architecture, Design, and Photography. Today we have architectural photographer Rob Van Esch. Am I saying that last name right?
Yeah, mostly. Mostly.
An American version of it. Now you reside in Denmark?
No, in the Netherlands.
Netherlands. So as an American, I have a hard time distinguishing between Holland, Denmark, and the Netherlands. So give me that differentiation real quick.
Holland and the Netherlands are the same.
Okay.
And Denmark is just above Germany.
Oh. Okay.
So it's pretty close to Netherlands.
All right. And you just said this. Sorry, you're in Holland.
Yeah, I'm in Holland. Okay. So it's the same as Netherlands. And well, for Americans, Holland is Amsterdam, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I guess probably.
I'm living 100 kilometers from Amsterdam, so that's the Netherlands.
Okay.
Cool. Okay.
And your background also, you're trained as an economist.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's a really interesting part of this conversation, because I personally, you know, there's this fine line in photography that we do, like commercial photography, that is both a economic adventure and a creative adventure. And to have someone who's trained as an economist first, I was trained as an architect and now work as an architectural photographer. You being trained as an economist and now working as an architectural photographer, I think that has a lot of interest in looking at the business of architectural photography with a good, you know, background or training in that, the economy of the whole thing. And I would always thought of economists as being just people who worked with money, like they were bankers. But I didn't realize, really, and this is just my own ignorance, that the economy of everything, what's the economy of doing something this way rather than doing it that way? Or it's a very interesting occupation once I started to learn what it was actually about in my 30s, I don't know. But give us a little bit of background how you went from being trained as an economist to now architectural photographer.
Well, so I made a pretty a fundamental career switch 5-6 years ago, because before I was working as an economist or a managing director of an industry association. Having had positions in government and at in corporate level. And then I started a photography business 6 years ago. And basically, you know, when I started, I knew literally nobody who would ever commission a photo. So that was kind of a challenge.
Now, why did you choose to do this? Why? What drew you to photography?
I liked it. I liked making beautiful photos. I had some talent for it, I think. But nevertheless, then the real challenge, of course, is to make a business out of it, to make a living out of it. And that is where, you know, I was trained as an economist, but have had to do a lot with communications policies and how to implement them, how to manage your brand, you could say, and that really helped in developing myself, that not as a photographer but as a commercial photographer, I think.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you have much experience with associating with or being around the idea of what a photographer is and how it's perceived in America versus Europe?
Is it perceived very differently then?
I've always felt that Europe has a much different appreciation for art. There's very much more a cultural appreciation, a deeper appreciation for art. In Europe than there is in America. Americans, I believe, to be far more, if this is the right word, I'm not sure, but pragmatically oriented. There's far more a sentiment of, look, well, why would you do that? It's more expensive and you're not going to get a return on that. Do this and cut that silliness out. Europe technically or typically will have an artist and an architect and an engineer involved on a bridge rather than just an engineer as you would have in the US.
Well, I think that, but isn't it true that in architectural photography, these elements come together more or less?
Yeah.
Because we, you know, we are not real, we are not making real art.
Right.
But
now define that but one real quick.
But we are doing something very artistically.
Yes. Yes.
Because it is art to make our kind of images.
Yes.
It's not viewed as art, but we have to have a very particular craftsmanship to make them.
Mm-hmm.
Kind
a skill
of
set.
Arty. Yeah, a skill set. And the funny thing is, I think in our profession, and that's also the point of the ebook I think I wrote, is that it is a skill set that we use for the clients to make them being able better to market themselves.
Right.
So better position themselves in the market. And then art and economy come together, I think.
In that, yeah, I mean, our commercial photography in general, I think, is a place where economy and art actually come together. And there's there's a certain level of prostitution of oneself to actually make that happen, which in some ways to me is prostitution has a very specific connotation to it, but I don't know it. It's one of those words that I think, like the word perverted, does not necessarily mean sexual. It means you took the original thing and it's been changed. You know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, as a commercial artist, essentially, you're taking all of your life experience that informs every decision you make in the current moment, and you're turning that into something that people pay to use for their own benefit.
Yeah.
And in that sense, it can feel a bit like prostitution, but not prostitution that you'd associate sexually. But
no. Yeah, but I do not see that myself as such, because you know, I think we get a lot of freedom to make the images we ourselves like.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, I have to photograph from that angle or that angle. But most of the time, I think 95% of the time, clients really like having beautiful images.
Oh yeah.
So it's really up to us to deliver them, and to be very creative to deliver them.
Mm-hmm.
So and it's not the prostitution as you say it. I don't see that because the. There's a lot of freedom in making the images.
Yeah, but if prostitution could have a neutral connotation, it would be that I don't know that I'd be at this very specific place doing this specific thing unless I was being paid. So, I mean, going to work in a factory is prostitution of your life. In that sense,
that's called work. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, work is a form of prostitution of your life. So when I look at it, though, I look at like, am I in front of architecture that inspires me? And I say to myself, you know, it does, and I'm happy to be here doing this. So that part of it doesn't bother me, but it is like it's something always in the back of my mind that's a little weird, especially when you're working creatively. But for yourself, when you approach creatively someone else's creativity, as we do as architectural photographers, you have a built environment that you come in and lay your creativity over.
Yeah.
How? What is the respect of the initial creative intent of the architect in regard to your own creative input and voice that you put into your images?
I think it's because it is work in the end, you know. The architect has to be happy with the images. So it's very important for a photographer to have a really developed listening ear for the wishes of the architect or the client. Mm-hmm. What's the story that has to be conveyed with the image? You know, and that I think that is the but that's how we think about it, and what we can. That's how we find the right attitude for the angle with for the image with an open mind always. Mm-hmm. But that open mind is fed by the desires of the architect, you could say.
Mm-hmm. So, in looking through some of your work, you've been in front of some really really great architecture, and you've captured it well, and you've captured it from what I see in a very subtle expression of the photographer. Some architectural photography that I look at can be very, the voice of the photographer in the photographs mm-hmm. can be louder than the creativity coming through from the architect. And mm-hmm. to me, I think architects in general will lean towards a more subtle and silent representation through photography rather than this highly, you know, lit, highly post-produced kind of Las Vegas look, or, you know, mm-hmm. for lack of a better term. Do you have any mind, what is your mind and your thought process in how much lighting you add, how much post-production you add, how many photographic tricks or whatever else you imply, whatever the word is for that?
Yeah. Well, I do a lot of post-production. I think if I'm out for a day, I'll be working on the computer for a day, mm-hmm. like that, one-to-one, I think. But it's a kind of post-production that you don't always, the outsider won't, probably doesn't even see everything that you do.
Yeah.
So you call it subtle. I would agree with that, I think. Because it's not my job, I think, or not my intention to overwhelm the architect. You know, if the architect has to say with a picture in his hand to a potential client, well, I made this building, but you know, but the photographer has done this, then you don't do a good job, I think.
Right.
So
right.
It has to be, I think and that doesn't say that sometimes it's hard to recognize the buildings that are on the images, because the buildings are shot on the most beautiful time of the day, on a beautiful day in the year. And, you know, you pick your moments, and you pick them, you portray a building at its best possible way.
Right.
And that is what I try to do.
Right. All right. I'm working through some later questions my head. So I'd like to jump into okay, that's what I was thinking. So the first, since I don't actually have a lot of other architectural photographers on this podcast much, I have weird emotional relationship, a weird emotional relationship with competition in too close of a realm. Working as a creative, I've found that to watch other people get work that you could have gotten is just like one of those things that, like, well, I'm going to fail and no one's ever going to use me again, and I'm going to have to get a 9-to-5 job at 7-Eleven or something, you know. So there's that weirdness, but I'm working on getting over that. So great. But you're as an architectural photographer, what's your technical gear and stuff that you work with? I don't like to spend too much time on that, but
no.
I am kind of interested. And what's your process of workflow, just as a quick go through?
Yeah. Well, the gear is, I think I think most architectural photographers will have that gear. It's a Canon 5DSR together with the three tilt shift lenses, a huge tripod which can go to up to 2.5 meters, a ladder to reach it in the car, and for interior some lighting sometimes. Mm-hmm. And in the post production, you know, it's Photoshop and Lightroom together. Yep. And in Photoshop, it's extremely useful plugin of Tony Kuiper, the luminosity mask plugin. Mm. You know, okay. I really couldn't live without it.
Yep. All right, cool. So having the technical stuff out of the way.
Yeah.
I'd like to go over. So you put together and released an ebook. Essentially, yeah, on the economics of architectural photography. Do you want to run us through that really quick, just the reasoning and the gist of the book that you put out?
Yeah. Well, it's about the economics of architectural photography, because I see it as an investment of the client in its own brand.
Yep.
And I think that's a different way of looking at it. Because, you know, I've talked to so many architects and design firms, and not everybody is looking at architectural photography in that way, in a really economic way, in mm-hmm. which for which you can increase the value of your investment by doing the right things.
Right.
And that is the essence of the ebook. It's an investment of the client in its own brand. And its own development, you know, and it flourishes more when the communication policies of the client is just in its place and well thought through, and it flourishes when there's a good relationship between the client and the photographer, because then you can really add value to the whole product and to the process. Hmm. I think that is the essence of the ebook. So it's also a question posed to the clients, you know, because I mentioned a kind of a conscience. Is that a good English word? A conscience question? A question of conscience?
Kind of a moral, yeah, or ethical or conscious in that way.
Yeah, well, conscious in the sense from, you know, the basic question. You have your website, it's out there 24/7. Potential clients can look anytime on it, have an opinion about you on the basis of what they see. Mm-hmm. So the question I pose to design companies is, are you really busy with that kind of activities? Or is it an activity, you know, oh yeah, the website, you know, has to do it between two deadlines in, and perhaps, oh no, there's a new deadline, so we won't make it. So, or is the website, you know, an integrated part of a well thought through communications policy, which serves your brand development? Right. And that's basically the question. And if in the second part, if the answer is the second one, of course, then architectural photography better fits in and has right. more value for them.
Right. Most of the clients that I work with have a fairly well thought out approach, policy, and marrying of their imagery to their branding, to their website. The thing mm-hmm. you had pointed out that I think was a really good, especially the commercial firms. The commercial mm-hmm. firms generally have their own marketing people in-house, or, you know, yeah. working for them.
Yeah.
But your comment in your book of having readily available PDF brochures that they can download and simply yeah. share. I'd never really yeah. thought about that, but that's a very, very nice choreographed, coordinated, collated, whatever. Mm-hmm. representation of a, like if you had a PDF of every single project you had as an architect that was, you know, graphically designed well and able to be like, oh, I'll just download that and I'll keep it as I'm working through designing my own house. And then you realize I might need to hire an architect to design this because I'm realizing it's a lot of work. You might actually go back and hire that architect or, you know, who knows, just the process. And I thought that was a really good point. So I've taken down, let's see here, I think 8 different kind of quotes from the book to kind of go over that I'll read out. And then if you want to go in a little more depth in your thought process on them, that'd be good.
Yeah.
So first question posed to Rob. Having architectural photos taken is an economic decision by the client. It is an investment by the architect in improving his own brand experience and thus his or her market position. The return on that investment can be increased in a number of ways. If it falls into the fertile soil of a well thought out commercial communication strategy of the client and an optimal collaboration between the client and photographer. That's basically what we just talked over, but what did you have experiences or anything that kind of informed this idea for you?
Well, it's you know, in the last couple of years, I think most of the companies I've worked for are in the league that are really thinking about developing their own brand. But when I just started, you know, I phoned to, I think, hundreds of design companies, as I think every starting photographer does.
Yep.
And it surprised me how many times you could get the answer, the sister of the partner makes the images, or, you know, whatever. And that were not very small companies. But they were already medium companies.
Right.
And then if you look at their websites, you can think, wow, do you sell this? You can do better, you know?
Yep.
And in the end, in working through your own career, of course, you get people start calling you, and they very often are already aware of the value of your work.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, especially in the first 2-3 years, I pretty often had that experience.
Yeah, yeah. And now, how long have you been working as an architectural photographer?
6 years.
6 years. And walk me through how you actually kind of broke into it, your process, and how your background as an economist kind of helped you like break into that, because 6 years is still pretty new, but you seem to be have gotten yourself in front of some really good architecture.
Thank you. As I said before, when I started, I knew nobody who would ever commission a photo. So I really had to start from scratch on cold calling, and very importantly, have a good website. I think that is very, very important. If people look at your website, they have to get a kind of a wow feeling, and think, well, that could be a guy with whom I could work with.
Right.
And I've always given very, very much attention to my website. And developing two, 3 times a year, a newsletter to hundreds and hundreds of people whom I've met. So that kind of things, really, I'm always thinking of how can I communicate with the outer world, with potential clients. So I think that is the most important thing I've done, together with the visibility on the internet, of course.
Right.
I think it's a useful experience that I started with a different company name. So I had kind of Ruimtes in Beeld, it's called in Dutch, and that's in English is that the spaces of images, you could say. And I knew I was doing the right things on the internet, on my website. So I had a good text, I had good images, I had that's all text, I did everything well. And yet I didn't really get to the first page in Google.
Mm.
So 1.5 years ago, I got an email from a guy. He said, you know, there's a new name. I would like to sell it. It's architecturephotograph.nl. So that's basically in English, that would mean architecturalphotographer.com. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was exactly what I do. Yeah. So I bought a name. I changed my whole website, the whole look and feel. Not the website, but you know, the whole text, the URLs, everything changed. And then since then, I think if you look at the Google numbers, I'm on the first page of Google always.
Hmm. All right, and is that when you search in your region or anywhere in the world?
Yeah.
Or?
No. It's Dutch. So yep. I choose for Dutch. You know, it's you know, you have to focus. I'm not focusing on the English market or UK or Belgium or Germany or US. That's very far away, of course. But I'm focusing on the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And that's how I write my texts, mm-hmm. Focusing on the Netherlands.
Yeah. And you do have such good architecture around there to begin with. Like, you could only work in the Netherlands and have a simply amazing portfolio. So kind of jealous of that. So you would say it was a combination of for one, your mind and training as an economist, I think, set you up for entering into business life very well. Because if you look at the typical person who, you know, as a late teenager says, oh, I want to take pretty pictures and get people to pay me for it, you're going to probably have about 90% to 95% of those people failing and going into some other, you know, I bet you more people as architectural photographers come from an educational background outside of photography than do.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that just because different discussion probably. So cold calling, your background as an economist, a constant vigilance in your mindset and your thinking of how is my marketing getting out there? How am I reaching the public I want to reach? How much in-person meeting did you do with people?
Really, not much.
Really?
It's very funny, isn't it?
You guys are a bunch of introverts there in the Netherlands. Like, oh, we don't need to meet.
But basically, no, there are still clients whom I work for years already, whom I've never seen.
Wow, interesting. Now, when you do a shoot, do you not typically have the architect on site with you? Or?
Yeah, sometimes. You know, that differs. Sometimes they go along, and sometimes, you know, they just say, I know what you're doing. So we have a discussion on beforehand, of course. So I try to get out of them what they are looking for in the images. And then I go, because it's nice to have an architect around, but it's also a little bit complicating. Because, you know, you have to be very flexible, you know. We have to be very flexible very flexible in our timing. So, you know, we can look out the window and think, well, today would be a good day. So now we go. So and that is difficult if you have somebody accompanying you.
Right.
So then
that's a good point.
Then it's more, you know, flexibility is restricted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Generally, what I've found, I live in the northeast of America in Maine, and the weather there through the summer and fall is pretty reliable and rarely all that bad. Winter, late fall and winter and everything can be pretty harsh, and you can get rained out. But I'll usually schedule a day for a shoot. For some reason, with all my shoots, there's always the client there. And then we'll have usually a stylist and then my assistant and then, usually multiple people from the client's team that are going to stand in as walkthroughs, lifestyle, or whatever else. But there's, on occasion, I think we probably did 3 or 4 shoots this past year where they were like, no, we know what you do. We're happy with what you do. You go on site, and here's the number of people on site that'll manage it, and you know, you'll get access. That's interesting, just hear how different people work. We have a massive tripod as well from earlier conversation here that you had said.
Yeah.
We call it Megapod, but it's a like a movie set. It probably goes up to about 20 feet light stand, but I fix the camera to it and run it up like 20 some feet. But you have to really get used to like pushing against the stand and then slowly taking your hand off so it doesn't have the wobble to it. So it's you can use it at a certain shutter speed, and after that it becomes a little weird. So question number 2. Originally trained as an economist, this is you speaking, me speaking as
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
Originally trained as an economist, I'm always looking for the economic value of the architectural photographer's product. An economist also looks for opportunities to increase value. In this case, how can the economic value of architectural photography be increased both by the client and the photographer? What are some good ways you've found to increase the value of architectural photography for both the client and the architectural photographer?
I think the basis is in the process of understanding each other. Mm. You know, the client being able to express his needs clearly, and the photographer to going in length to deliver them. I think that is the basis of increasing the value. It's two sides of the same coin, of course. Mm-hmm. And again, it's about the client who really uses them, built in as an important element in their own communication strategy.
Right.
That's
right.
How we. Yeah.
Someone who's very clear with their branding knows how they want to frame up and portray what their product is. And so when they have a very clear vision around that, it helps what you're doing. It helps your approach. Yeah. And that is something I've pulled from certain clients that have very much increased the value, like you're saying, the value of architectural photography by doing like a creative description of like this single project, like a single residence. They'll do a whole like paragraph that encapsulates the idea, the spirit of whatever, of that project. And that helps me kind of have that idea in my head of what this project is all about. Not just what angles look best, but what angles look best, and then how can we reinforce this idea of the project within that composition even.
Yeah.
And that, like you're saying there, I think that's something. For me personally, I always try and cover all the bases, and then in the back of my mind, I'll have this idea that I need to push beyond my limits in some areas that are beyond what the client is looking for. So I'll try and always do something a little different. And if I fail at that, it's fine because I'm going beyond what the client was looking for. This is a test, you know?
Yeah.
And so to keep that little part in my process, sometimes you hit something and you're like, ooh, this is pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
So that's when I read that, that's kind of what I took away from it. So thank you for expounding on that. Number 3, this is a statistical one that just is crazy to think of how information is flowing in this age. But in 2020, while everyone was hiding from COVID, I'm adding this.
I mean, we are still hiding, by the way. We are in a full lockdown.
Well, we're in California, which is the hiding of the all hiding. But it's weird. You look outside, the only real... There is still, though, when you walk around, everyone keeps their distance. Everyone has masks on. It's just, I'm excited to be able to see people's faces again and not have that weird thing going on, but it is what it is. In 2020, there were a gobzillion photos taken, and you have a number here that I don't even know how to say that number.
I don't know. It's a lot.
Yeah. 90% of all our available data has been produced in the last 2 years from photographs, just cell phones, you name it. Every day, the timelines on Instagram are enriched by nearly 100 million photos. Actually, a smaller number, Snapchat users, share 10 times more than that. Let's see, 10 times more. Then we have Facebook, Twitter, etc. Only 7% of the 1.4 trillion annual photos are taken with a camera designed for this purpose. Not even like a professional grade camera, but just a camera, not a phone, you know. Which is just, to me, when I look at the nature, philosophically, the nature of what we are, my grounding feeling is that we are conduits for information. Like, this fleshy body, this mind, this DNA is all a conduit for information. And what we've created in the internet, in phones, in social media, is just connecting and creating more and more and more information. And to what end, I don't know, but it seems like our overall purpose is creating order out of what is not ordered, or creating new order. But that statistic alone is just mind-boggling to really think about what it's going to do to our society, our culture, and all of that. In writing this, what was your kind of deeper thought and takeaway from that?
The deeper thought is that we, as architectural photographers, you know, we produce only such a very, 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 very small part of these images. Mm-hmm. And we're not improving our quantity because so in percentage wise, we are producing less and less and less of the whole image production in the world. And yet, at the same time, we manage to survive one way or the other.
Right.
While some kind of photography has really difficulty in surviving.
Or is gone.
So, and that was also a trigger for me to write this ebook. You know, what can we do to survive this tsunami of images at the same time while other types of photography, you know, don't survive? Mm-hmm. So that is the reasoning behind those pretty high statistics. Yeah,
you have to think that these kind of contracts that you sign without reading, like with Instagram and all these other media outlets, that, I mean, if you just look at the ideas behind stock image sites like Getty and everything else, they make really large amounts of money off of stock photos. And you, right now, Instagram and all these other apps are capturing all these photos, and they're getting naturally hashtag or and organized, collated as they come in, and they're creating an image database beyond anyone's previous comprehension. It's like they've turned us into a image capturing and processing slime around the globe. I mean, we're just it's crazy to think of that. But at the same time, I just ran into a guy a week ago in Southern California at the Salton Sea who does photo tours and everything else. And he's finding that the people that are coming on his photo tours of like nature photography type stuff, they're just bringing their phones. They're not bringing out a camera.
No.
And he's having to learn how to show people how to use their phone as a camera rather than a camera. And so the little tricks and stuff about that. But you could feel in him, as you were talking to him, the lament of the loss of his income. Essentially, I think he was expressing that it was becoming harder and harder to maintain what he had built his life on because of this new age of photography. But yeah. I was there thinking, I'm on quite a long vacation here because, you know, I'm doing well, but I've also structured my life to say I'll have less money, but have more time with my family and everything else, mm-hmm. to be fair. But, you know, I'm not feeling the pain of loss of,
no.
It's almost like people are realizing through taking all these images that, sure, you get the information, but you don't get the feel unless you're just lucky. But when mm-hmm. you go with someone who, you know, knows how to get lucky every time when capturing an image, that's highly valuable. And it's almost yeah. like the clients that we would have that would have an aesthetic mind towards architecture are going to understand that, that you don't send out a, you know, someone who's just maybe going to get lucky and capture something nice of yours. But it also sounds like you've established a client base from individuals that might have thought they were doing well by you looking at their website, and then they say, mm-hmm. oh, we have so-and-so, you know, third cousin removed taking photos. And you might have mm-hmm. been able to spot them as a potential client because their imagery was not up to snuff. That might have been some of the ways that you got clients potentially, or no?
Not too many, because if they are stuck in that mindset, mm-hmm. you know, they don't come out.
I've had two or three clients that I can think of right now that when I approached them, their imagery was, I could tell, like, I could impress them with what I could do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by doing that, they've become very good clients.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's an interesting thing going on with technology and everything else right now that is having just such a huge, I think, impact and change. You know, to just see people constantly like this. I haven't really spent that much time in Europe since I think we went to Rome a little while ago, but I don't remember thinking about it. But just everyone all the time seems to be just looking at a phone.
Yeah.
And I hate it, but I do it myself, you know. and the amount of information, the amount of images being consumed, it's going to be a different place for our kids. So anyway.
Yeah.
So question four is kind of a follow-up to that. Where you say surviving the photo tsunami, many types of professional photography suffer from the daily tsunami of photos. 15 years ago, a photographer could earn a decent living from, example, stock photography. However, the concept of intellectual property has completely eroded in that segment. In addition to the rise of large numbers of amateur photographers who make good images for little money, this income has now been decimated. In many other types of photography, it has become complex to distinguish yourself as a photographer and perhaps more importantly, to put the added value in the spotlight. To me, like what we were just talking about, it's very, I think, very difficult to introduce the, you know, gobzillion amount of photos taken with a cell phone as anything that's gonna chip away at what we do as architectural photographers. Because when I see and I experience the process of shooting architecture, it is a tedious, painstaking, difficult, you know, at times horrid process that I enjoy.
Yeah, and that's our savior.
yeah. It is a very technical game, but it's also very artistic. And I saw, and I hope it continues to go the direction of also not just still imagery, but incorporating more and more videography of the representation of architecture. I think that works well, but the budgets with architects are not always there to do to the next level in that. We do some of that, but not a lot. But I just don't see it, especially since you're needing to capture a unique one-off thing like a home or anything else, and I just don't see that changing unless the actual construction of homes becomes something like a, you know, a Sears and Roebuck home that you could have ordered, you know, back in the 20s or 50s, whenever that was, and they'd all show
that's still far away.
I don't see that changing.
No, I think that's true, but it is a pretty difficult thing to do architectural photography in the right way. And, you know, it takes years of training, years of experience to do it like we do. And there are many good photographers, but it's also, of course, the combination of being good at your profession and being good as in the business wise.
Now, why, kind of a side note from earlier, but why did you specifically choose architecture to focus on with photography? Was it architecture first and you thought, well, I love architecture, I'll photograph it? Or was it, I love photography,
I'll turn it? No, I think I did a lot of photography before I started. Before I started as a professional photographer. And that were always photos of cities, I think. Many photos of cities. Nice photos, I think. And then I started a conversation when I decided to start for myself. I spoke to a lot of people, and they said, well, you know, looking at your work, you're making images of spaces, so that has a relation with architecture. So that is basically how I ran. Then I spoke to some architects I knew, and from one thing came the other. So that slowly developed, and it developed faster when I started cold calling. Yeah,
right. So, but as a business plan, you chose architecture specifically and didn't kind of try and include other things in that.
Yeah, I included stock photography, mm-hmm. But you know it generated income. But what I really didn't like is that you don't have anything to say about the business model. Mm. You're just one of the millions,
right?
You know,
right.
That's not my the game that I want to play.
Right. Yeah.
To steer myself what I'm doing and how, and my actions have to, you know, you have to see the follow up of your actions, and that is not the case with stock photography anymore.
Right, right. I did a very similar thing when I started out. That I it was when iStock kind of first came out.
Yeah,
and. I decided, just as I was slow and still trying to find clients, I was focusing on trying to become an architectural photographer. But like yourself, I was like, well, I can do some stock stuff just to play with some creative juices. And I did probably 17 different images that were kind of concepts that I came up with, or stuff that I just had sitting mm-hmm. around that could work as far as concepts, as far as, you know, close but not quite, or stress or happy or joy, or, you know, with stock, how they do that. And I just had a visual in my head one night of my wife chasing a trash truck out the front of our house that was down the street, like carrying two bags of trash in a bathrobe and slippers, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know why, I just had that visual. And so I thought, I bet I could make that. And so I set up one morning and got the trash truck. I set up another morning and got the snow on the street and the house. And then I set up another morning and got my wife running out and did it all from the same perspective. And then I, you know, uploaded that to iStock as a, you know, just here's a stock image that might work. And someone entered it into like the iStock photo of the year. And just by a fluke, someone saw it, entered it. And I ended up like winning the grand prize for that. That at the time,
oh, really?
Was like, yeah, it back when this happened, we had actually moved out of the house I'd photographed this in front of because we were saving up money to have our first child. Being self-employed in America, you kind of have to think about those things. Yeah. And that $5,000 prize was like, all right, now we can have a kid, you know, and it gave me a lot of confidence moving forward to say, like, I've done something that people are recognizing here. So. And I often wondered if I've kept going down that stock path, if things would have been different or better or worse or what. But I just got busy with architectural work, and it fell by the wayside. So, but
I think that's better.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
My next one here, you said the most important thing is the mindset of the client. Paul Owen, an architect in Brisbane, Australia, aptly tells in a podcast about architectural photography, after finishing the building, something that's going to be there for quite a while, the client gets that building. Obviously, we get fees, but if everything else stops, all that defines the practice is the photography. It's like being a musician, and if you don't record your work, you don't exist. This seems logical, but I don't know how many practices of designers think this way. To me, that was interesting. That I think that's a good relation there. That as a musician, you can perform live, but it's only going to affect the people that are there immediately seeing it. And I've always described to potential clients that I'm trying to convince of the value of architectural photography that this is essentially the tip of the spear. You know, you've got the shaft and all this education and all this money invested and everything else. And then at the tip of the spear that you're throwing, you put your cousin with, you know, a $400 camera. Like you put all of this behind it and you got a dull tip at the end. And it's, you know, usually people kind of get that. So, but I thought that was a very apt, if that's the right word, take on that. So another one I had here, the photographic eye and experience. The challenge for the architectural photographer is to reap the benefits of the listening ear with the photographic eye. By definition, the photographer has an eye for composition, otherwise he, she would have had to choose a different profession. But for the architectural photographer, it is important to do this in such a way that the economic value of the images that are created is maximized. Experience plays an important role in this. Experience with all aspects of the shoot, studying in advance what the best moments for capturing will be, dealing with surprises on the spot, with people who play a role in the images, etc. After all, an architectural photo is not in the photo category. I stand and I shoot. So explain that one to me.
Well, I think it touches on what we said before. It's not very easy to do architectural photography.
No.
It's not about just having a camera and being good in Photoshop. You know, you have to have a good camera. You have to be good in Photoshop. But it is not all. You have to be able to get along with people who are present at the scene. Mm-hmm. You have to make appointments with them. You have to direct them when they are performing a role in the image. You have to know how the weather will develop. You know what time, you have to know what time then to be there. What time is the best time to capture that kind of angle or that kind of angle? You know, that's all different kind of capabilities that you have to have as an architectural photographer. Mm-hmm. And those develop, you know, some you have, some develop in the course of time. And then that all goes with that open mind when performing a job.
You know,
every job is different, and you know, you have to, every client is different, and every project, you have to be there for every single project again and again and again. Mm-hmm.
That's actually one aspect of our business model that doesn't worry me, but it's an unfortunate thing that's unavoidable, that if you're not physically working, for the most part, you're not going to be making money as an architectural photographer. You can always resell images and everything else, but it's not as much that you're building a business that you can sell. You know, if they're paying for you to be there, they want you to be there. It's not like you can, not even like with an architect, that the principal might come and sell design services and oversee them.
Yeah.
But they're going to pass that off to, you know, a large amount of minions probably to, you know, finish it out and everything else. As a sole creative, essentially, you're as soon as you stop working, your income stops, which is a business decision to be made. But yeah. I'd like to hear a little bit about your pre-shoot routine as far as scouting and what you like to do as far as, I'd like to visit the site, or do you have the client do the scouting and whatever they get, you kind of reference and then you reference it by Google Earth and then arrive on the day. What is your process pre-shoot?
Yeah, it's a small country in the Netherlands, so I don't do much scouting. If I have to go back one time, sometimes it happens. But then you go back. It's always a small number of miles that you have to drive. You know, it's a small, very small country. So I don't do any physical scouting. It's not necessary. But what I do is speak in length with the client, have them send over iPhone photos. That's what very often happens. Mm-hmm. And on the hand, alongside the iPhone photos, you know, they explain the project and what they think it's important, and you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
So that's I think that's the main way of working. And very, very often, 99 of 100 times, that's by telephone.
Mm-hmm. I generally find that it's the clients for me that will determine if they want to do scouting ahead of time or not. And yeah. I'll find that the larger commercial clients will generally have, if they've been in business for quite a time, they'll have a system that they already use where they go and scout, they deliver the scouting images with floor plans marked where they think roughly the composition should be taken. And so I'll be able to get a lot of information that way. Some of the clients I have want me to put it in the budget to visit the location wherever it is beforehand, or with some clients that I work with a lot, we'll show up the day, like maybe the day before, and just do the scouting, irregardless, that's that word that I always get mixed up, but regardless of the time of day or anything else, we're just scouting the compositions, and then the next morning we hit the ground running. And there's an app, Sunseeker, that you can look through the camera and it'll tell you the trajectory of the sun throughout the day.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a really, really useful tool.
Yeah.
And then others, like with residential architects, will do pretty much the same, you know, one of three options where it's no scouting at all, just show up and see what we get, depending on their budget and their seat of the pants kind of approach. It all depends. But at the longer I do this, the more regimented and precise the process usually comes, because I've intentionally priced myself into a more elite is such a bad word in the States, but you know,
a higher
price segment, but they're more demanding. They have a very precise idea of what they want. So they want those things taken care of ahead of time, and they want reliability of results. So it generally is that we'll be scouting a lot of the time, unless they've worked with us a lot. So, yeah. The last one I have written down here, learn on the job and don't stop learning. The ability to learn today is changing the landscape of our world. And as that applies to how you can learn about photography today compared to how I had to learn about photography when I started, even like right up the road from here, where we're at, was Brooks Institute of Photography, which was like the Harvard of photo schools. And it's shuttered. It's gone.
Okay.
And I believe at least the campus that was here, I'm not sure if overall it's completely shut down. But anyone that asks me, I tell them, look, I've had success at this. I'm making a full-time living off of it. It's not like, you know, I'm like part-time or anything. I never had a single day of photo anything in my life. Mm-hmm. It is a technical trade, that part of it. Like the learning the lighting, learning the blah, blah, blah. All of that is a technical thing. And if you're going to be a technician, you're going to get paid as a technician, which means that there'll be very much a ceiling of pay and compensation and employment that you will get. It's not about the technical part of it. The technical part of it is a hurdle that you absolutely must be able to clear. But that's not what you're getting paid for anymore. You're getting paid for the emotion that you can create consistently in that single frame. And if you can't do that, just get an iPhone and do what you're going to do with that. Because it's I generally tell people that ask me, what should I do to, you know, become a photographer? I tell them, if you're going to invest in school and go into that much debt, which in America, you're not getting out scot-free without a lot of debt, which is a huge risk here. You should study the subject you want to photograph, because then you're going to know how to communicate the emotion of that subject by knowing it, rather than the technical parts of photography. Study, obviously, the, you know, the philosophy and ideas behind composition and everything else, but all those things are available online. YouTube, anything else, books, it's all there. It's simply all there. It's no one's going to get hurt by this. It's only your, you know, blood, sweat, and tears that you're risking. So that's generally my thought process in that. And I talk way too much, so I'm going to pass it over to you.
No, but I really wouldn't know what to say anymore, because this is totally true. This is really totally true. Yeah, I agree 100%.
Now, do you have a lot of architectural photographers that you rub shoulders with there in Holland, Netherlands at all? Or
no.
Community
no,
like that?
Actually.
No, really?
Actually not.
See, I knew it. You're all introverts over there in Europe.
Yeah, but you started with the difficulty in having a relationship professionally with another architectural photographer. I think that also goes for the UAE and for us in the Netherlands.
Yeah. It's a hard thing when
perhaps even more, because you know it's a small country. Mm. There are not so many architectural photographers.
Yeah. Now, for your work that you do there in the Netherlands, is there a lot of publications and everything else that you work with, or is it primarily that you're working directly with architects mostly?
Yeah. Mostly with the architects. I think I'm pretty easy with them using the images. Mm-hmm. So they can use the images for their commercial purposes. Mm-hmm. And if a publication, a magazine, fits their commercial purposes, you know, part of the communication policies, then it's fine with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in the States, it's always an issue, because an architect will have a PR person that will try and share the project somewhere, and that somewhere, generally, a lot of times, will just say, "Oh, we don't have a budget. We just have people send us photos." Like, "Oh, you don't pay for what professionals do for the use of your own publication." What I think in my lifetime, it's gone from the originally how it was for the last 25, 50 years to now this new thing and with digital and everything else. But I have found, like, I don't want to get pushed out of the market, and I've had to push back on clients and say, if the publication that values what they do and values what you do enough, mm-hmm. if they don't want to pay for what is needed to represent your work, I'm going to have to ask you to pay for it, because it's not fair for that to just, you know, get left on the photographer. So, and usually I just charge what typical stock usage fees for something like, you know, editorial publication would be, which is usually pretty small, but it's enough to say, you know, there needs to be some boundaries here of respect.
Yeah.
don't know if you have to deal with that.
I agree that that has changed, and you know, at the same time, you know, if I use energy, I would like to use positive energy and not negative ones.
Right. And that's always a narrow path to kind of navigate has pitfalls on either side. But
yeah.
Well, was there anything else you were thinking at all that I'm missing? Any questions you have about the practice of architecture in the States and photography or anything else? Or
well, I think it's you know, if I look at your website, you know, it's a marvelous website. I really love the images.
Thank you.
It's a different kind of style between the what we make, I think, and it's perhaps it's more staged or something like that. I don't know. There is some difference, I think, between the European and the American photographers.
Yeah, that's an interesting conversation, because I believe that. Have you been to Las Vegas?
Yeah.
Okay, so Las Vegas, the car that you have to drive if you live in Las Vegas is either a Corvette or an H2. H2 is a Hummer, you know, not the military version of the Hummer.
Yeah.
But when GMC made the yellow big puffed up thing that's a Suburban with a Hummer badge. There is something about the underlying ideals and values of America that the aesthetic end result is something that's usually less natural and maybe a little more manipulated. And I think on the American spectrum of that, I'm closer to the European ideals of that or idea of that, but I'm still in the America thing.
Yeah.
Which to me, when I look at it, the sky is usually brought in more. And the colors are more vibrant. Things are more sharp and punchy. They're a little more Hollywood makeup kind of stuff. And it's weird. It's unavoidable. It's like it's in me and I can't even avoid it when I try. And I'm always trying to come back from it a bit, because I do so appreciate like the Scandinavian modernist minimal silent.
Yeah.
But it's like when you're competing in America, it's like a really, really narrow balance beam you have to set yourself apart by looking a little bit better and more than is just standing there natural. Because the American idea doesn't take natural as best. It's a really weird thing. Because like when I look at your photographs, I look at the compositions and the slight blur of people moving in them, and the lack of punching up windows and punching up sky or anything else.
And
I'm like, yep, that's European photography. They're doing it. They're keeping it subtle. They're not like trying to look at me, I can jump the highest. It's different. But then I look at your background there and I'm like, dang, that's nicely detailed. You know, like the curtains, the floor, ceiling, windows, and
yeah.
And
it's natural, we do think about it.
yeah, and it's a very, very interesting cultural difference that has, you know, results in the aesthetic world. And it's that underlying culture that results in these aesthetic differences that you can just pick out. And philosophically, I like to try and understand why these things are different. But if you go back far enough, like your ancestors thought, you know what? We could drop everything, get on a boat, and risk death going across the Atlantic to start to do exactly what we want. Or we could stay here and, you know, make things better at a normal pace. You know, so you had this selection of a gene pool of people that came over here that were my ancestors that, like, I mean, you think about it now. Who's going to get on a spacecraft to go to Mars? they're going to be a little crazy, you know?
Mm.
And that's essentially what we had at the beginning of America, where some highly, highly independent, highly individualistic people that, you know, created great nation, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, they also elected Donald Trump. They also made, you know, the H2 and Las Vegas, which are also things that I don't value that much. I get it that people can be Republican and support Donald Trump, and I'm not trying to bash that. It's just, it's a very interesting thing when you look at the fine grains of aesthetic things that you pick up on in architecture, photography, art, and culture in America versus somewhere that's been around longer like Europe. And it's just, how on earth did that happen? And yeah, I could drone on for hours like that probably. So, but
okay,
some interesting stuff. Maybe another time. But it's probably close to 10 o'clock or something there your time, isn't it?
Quarter past nine now. Yeah.
Quarter past nine. Too bad.
So the curfew has already started again. So I can't go out anymore.
Oh, so you have a curfew in the Netherlands
as well. Yeah.
How is the spread of COVID and everything going there with vaccines and everything else? And
well, we're still in a pretty harsh lockdown at the moment.
Yep.
The infection rates are going down, but there's a very great worry about the British mutation.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So that spreads, you know, almost two times faster than the old one. One and a half times faster.
And do you guys have experience with people who've gotten it once getting it again, or is this just kind of hearsay?
No, perhaps, but I don't hear much about that. It's now really the worries about the British mutation. Mm-hmm. Some South African or Brazilian mutations are coming in now. But the British mutation is already taking it over. So today there were about 3,000 new contaminations of people, and 2/3 of them is already in the British mutation.
Mm.
And 2 weeks ago that was 5%.
Oh wow!
So yeah, So the government is pretty worried about that. So the lockdown has been extended for a month now again.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the lockdown mean for your daily life? Like, you can go to the grocery store and that's it, or
yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. Basically, all shops are shut down. Restaurants, bars, all shut down.
Yep.
And you can pay a visit to other people, but only with one person.
Mm.
So you can't go out, two of you, and visit children or So it's pretty harsh. Yeah.
Yeah, we can all still get in a Hummer here and go to Las Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's weird. It's, like, I'm pretty seriously introverted myself, so I don't care to go out to begin with. But it, where we're at here, I went downtown to pick up some food. Restaurants are still open. People still sit out. They'll allow people to sit outside, but you can walk right by them. You have to have a mask on. But if they're sitting and eating, they won't be wearing a mask. No. And everyone questions the validity of the mask and everything else. And some people double mask. And from the weird thing here is that from state to state to state,
The
things are different. And if it's a more Republican leaning state, they'll usually be more lax. If it's more Democratic leaning, they'll be tighter.
It's a hard time, and you know, the economy will suffer from it. We still have when companies get broke,
bankruptcy?
Still less bankruptcy than ever, which is very strange. So we have a strong government policy of really pumping money into the economy, giving support to companies, people. So that still helps, but you know, the line is getting thinner. That is very much the case. Yeah, line
is getting thinner. We're just now on our second round of PPP, and they call that Payroll Protection Program, where I'll be able to get, you know, a salary and a salary for an employee for a narrow specific amount of time that helps. So, you know, that's good. Other than that, though, I found that the residential architecture sector of the U.S. is through the roof. Going gangbusters because everyone's home looking at their home, thinking home office, renovate the home or build a new home, you know, while commercial photography of commercial spaces is just gone. I mean, the last commercial space we shot, I guess that was in D.C., but they're all still just pretty much vacant, you know. So for the past year, everything's been vacant.
Yeah. It'll improve again next year.
Yeah.
In half a year from now, I think.
Yeah. Now, I'd be interested in your take. Was it Sweden or Finland that just kind of said, we'll go with herd immunity?
Sweden.
And how are they faring from across the pond there for you?
The news is mixed. Yeah. Some people say, well, it was a good choice, and other people say, well, you know, we had far too many deaths that could have been avoided. So it's a mixed picture. Yeah.
Interesting time to be alive. In many ways. So
it is. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, Rob, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
And thanks for contacting me with that book. It's really interesting to read it over and to talk with someone on the way other end of the pond there and exchange kind of the differences in what we do. So thank you
so
much.
That's funny, isn't it? Yeah. Thank you for having me. Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.